Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Perspective on the Bible. I'm Pastor Fred. We're on Saturday. It happens to be about 2:30 in the afternoon on the 24th of July, a beautiful, hot, sunny day in New York area. And we're going to be talking about who is this Mary. This is the fourth part of a series on the Virgin Mary, the mother of Jesus, the mother of God. And what we're going to be trying to look at here is we're going to be looking at not too much the Bible passages today, but we're going to be looking closer at the rationale and some of the reasonings. Now, I understand that right away a person could say, well, you know, you're going to be hypothesizing, theologizing, philosophizing. You know, that's, well, listen, Darwinism does the same thing, and a lot of scientific so-called and academic so-called facts are nothing more than the ruminations of a human being. However, the point I'm trying to make is, in the description on the program today, is that I want to point out that I think we need to reevaluate, especially from the Protestant side of the Christian world, the place that we want to accord to Mary. Because I think that the Protestant world has, by and large, misunderstood the fact. And I started off with the first line of my description, which is Mary is not merely a tool for God to use. Very important piece of the puzzle. And it's a piece that I think we need to pay close attention to. However, at this point, let's just take a quick pause. We're going to have a little bit of our famous song that we start with, Hope, Faith, and Courage by the Brothers of Faith. I'll be back with you in a minute. Please stay with me, and we'll be talking about Mary, the mother of Jesus, the mother of God. Perspective on the Bible, 24th of July. And I'd just like to start right there with one of the things that I said in the very beginning, which is Mary is not merely a tool for God to use. And later on, I'm going to talk about this, but let's go right into the point here. Mary is not a thing. God makes things, and God makes people. And in previous episodes, we have talked about this very important fact, which is to say that the human person made in the image and likeness of God is a very important part of the Bible story and of the Christian faith. That you, the Christian person that you are, a creation of God that you are a reflection of Godness. And you have within you, and we have within ourselves, all of the attributes of God-like quality. Think of yourself, just think of yourself, whoever you are, you can see, you can hear, you can speak. You have languages, Spanish, Russian, Greek, German, English. You have the ability to write, the ability to create stories, the ability to record history, to record, to take care of files and to keep things up, you know, from the past. You have the ability to create music, to paint art, to make architecture, to build buildings, highways, roads. Even with the right now in the year 2010, we're having a spill in the, of oil in the Gulf. You have the ability to have robots, and you have the ability to go down there and try to fix this terrible, terrible, tragic accident. You, the human person, according to the Bible and according to the Christian faith, are very, very important. And one of the objectives of this entire series of programs, from the get-go, from the first day, is my sensitivity as a pastor of the Christian church and wanting to say to you, the listeners, that you are important to God. And the reason why you are important to God is because God made you. The mother and father may have had sex. And by the way, in this program, I'm not profane, but I'm not afraid to use language. I don't use the gutter language. I learned that as a child in New York City, raised up in the upper Bronx and upper Manhattan. I know how to use that language just as well as anybody else does. Just yesterday, I turned on the radio. I was on a different shoutcast type thing, and the guy was using the F word, the S word. He thought it was really cool because he could shout it, he could yell it, he could scream it, he could do whatever he wanted. He was an idiot. The guy was, you know, get out of my face. I don't want you. Because you're just degrading yourself and degrading me, and I don't want to be bothered with having you cursing at me and using all kinds of profane language in my home. I turn on your program, buddy. I turn on your shoutcast program. I turn on your icecast program, whatever program you're having, and all I hear is this filthy potty mouth, and I don't want it. I don't want it. And so I shut you off because you insult me. You insult me. You think you can abuse me by shouting F all into my face and all that kind of stuff. Get out. However, I'm not afraid of that language. That language is it's just language. You know, I can get onto that. I'm getting off the topic. But people who are doing that on the internet are just hurting the rest of us. And the people who are feeling their freedom to in the anonymity and the privacy of sitting behind a telephone or a microphone in the privacy of their own bedroom on a kitchen table somewhere, shouting profanities into my face in my home, 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 miles away. Hey, yay for you, buddy. You're a jerk. Excuse me, you're a jerk. Okay, now, back to Mary, because Mary is more important. But the profane enters into my discussion with you today about this particular topic, that Mary is not merely a tool for God to use. I think that's terribly important. God isn't raping her, for goodness sake. Let's get real. He's not committing adultery with this woman. God, let's get honest about what's going on here. God is saying to Mary in the story, in the book of Luke, that's recorded in the Holy Bible, which is the sacred book for the Christians, and in terms of the Old Testament, the sacred book for the Jews, and they don't even have a New Testament, and they would deny there is a New Testament, but that's okay, fine, amen. And for the Islam, the Quran, that supersedes the Bible, but they base a lot of their stuff on the Bible. Mary is not raped, she's not abused, she's not taken, she's not used by God, she's not merely a surrogate mother, she's not just a womb. You know, she's not something out of some kind of Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, but she's some kind of Alexiorial tank, I think it was called, in the Dune movie, Dune series. No, Mary is a person that's very important in the Bible. And everywhere in the Bible, when God is interacting with human beings, the personhood of the human being is extremely important to God. The uniqueness of the relationship is that God has created from conception this human being and endowed them with a soul. Now you may think that you are just the product of some kind of helter-skelter, willy-nilly sexual attraction of your mother and father, two primates, two carnivores who got together and had sex somewhere in a car, in the back room, in the bedroom, on the sanctity of marriage, but I don't care. You may think that you are just happening, you know, some kind of accidental freak that popped out one day. That you can think that, but that's not what the Bible says. And that's not what the Christian church teaches. You are, my dear friend, you are, whoever you are, young, old, boy, girl, any color, any race, any nationality, you are a person. And personhood comes from God. God is a person. God has a personality. God has a memory. God has experience. God has feelings. God has all, you got all of your personness from God. And so when you reflect upon yourself and you say, wow, I am a person, you're saying that I am a reflection of God. So, okay, I'm running out of time right now. I'm looking at my clock here on my little scoreboard on Blog Talk Radio. And I do want to do a few things today. So the main thing I want to point out is that Mary deserves more attention than she gets in the Protestant world because God chose her among all women. And it says so in the Bible, Hail Mary, the Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. That is the word of Elizabeth. Why is it that the mother of my Lord should come unto me? For as soon as the sound of your voice reached my ear, Elizabeth says to Mary, she says, as soon as the sound of your voice reached my ear, the babe, John the Baptist, in Elizabeth's womb, the babe in my womb leapt for joy. And blessed is she who believed that which had been promised unto her. The key item is, blessed are you who believed that which was promised unto you. Mary is the faithful. In the last episode, and I refer you back to episode number 3, we talked a great deal about the new Eve, the new creation, the new Genesis, that Mary is the new Eve. She is the mother of the faithful. She is the first to believe. Now, see, Eve didn't believe. God said, do not eat the tree. She didn't believe it. She believed the serpent instead. She believed herself. Ultimately, she didn't even believe the serpent. She believed herself. She looked upon the tree and saw that it was pretty and beautiful and desirable to eat and a delight to the eye and for food. And she reached out and she took the... And then she blames it on the serpent and ultimately she blames it on God. And she blames it on whoever. It's not the point. She made the decision. She was not believing. Mary, however, believes. And Elizabeth gives that acknowledgement to us in the book of Luke, in the first and the second chapter, where she says, and blessed are you who believe that which had been promised unto her, spoken unto her, whatever phrasing you want to use. So Mary's, the Roman Catholics want to call that she said yes to God. And that yes to God, it takes on enormous proportions. You know, frankly, I do not study this kind of stuff. I'm not a Roman Catholic. I haven't gone into a tremendous amount of looking into what they mean by Mary's yes to God, that whole type of thing. But, yeah, she did say yes. But the point of it is she said yes to the promise. She believed. She believed. And Mary, a sinner like all of us. Now, you can do Immaculate Conception, no original sin, prevenient grace. For those of you who know theology, that's a whole lot of Roman Catholics up to. And that's fine. Go for it. However, for the purposes of this program, we're just going to say that God comes to her, and she is the new Eve, and she says, yes, Lord, what do you want me to do or not to do? She says, yes, I obey. Yes, I believe. Yes, I trust in you, God. Yes, I trust in you, God. And I place myself at your disposal, O Lord. The purpose of this is to point out that the human person, magnificently, marvelously, awesomely made, has freedom of will, freedom of decision. We have the ability to say yes or no, even to God, even to life. A person who commits suicide says no to life. A person who works and works and works and works and works and copes and copes and copes and copes and moves forward in life says yes to life in the midst of all the difficulties. Mary's yes to life, Mary's yes to God, is the appropriate response of a sentient being, to use the latest mechanism movie that they use, what do they call them, Megatrons and all that business. You are a sentient being and I am a machine, you know, that's Transformer type stuff. I have grandchildren, so I watch this kind of stuff, take them to the movies and have fun with them on that. Anyway, get back to Mary. Mary's sentient being responds to the immortal God is, yes, I trust you. That's the faith. That's the point. And I place, because I trust, because I believe, because I love you, if we want to go that far, and I think you can, I place myself at your disposal. The definition of faith. And so it is that God overshadows her, hovers over her by the Holy Spirit, and creates within her a unique human person, Jesus, who has no human sperm involvement. We talked about that in Chapter 3. And if you want to look back about all that kind of biological discourse, you can look at that too. I talk about quite a bit of that in the third segment of this. But the child born to Mary is so unique. He shares only her blood, only her lymph, only, you know, in the placental situation where the placenta is attached to him and he is in her womb, and the blessed is the fruit of your womb, Jesus. Yes, because you see blood is passing through, blood type, lymph, RNA, DNA, mitochondrial bodies, all that stuff inside the cell, nuclear bodies, and all the stuff that's inside of the person, you know, all that good stuff. That, the genes, all this kind of stuff, is shared by Jesus and Mary only. He doesn't share that with, even with the Father. The Father doesn't even have that in that sense. If you want to take a Trinitarian viewpoint, that Jesus, the second person of the Holy Trinity, was the only God of a human experience. And he knows more of the human experience than God does. So that gets kind of funky, and I don't want to get funky and get craziness, and everybody's going to get, you're a heretic and all this kind of stuff. It's that interesting, and that's why I love religion. Religion is so much fun. Religion is so much fun dreaming about, thinking about, and just talking to you about it and saying, hey, folks, let's consider this, let's consider that, and what are we going to do about that? And sometimes maybe we find out that we've done too much. Maybe we find out that we have not done enough. Maybe we discover that we have much more to know and to learn and to appreciate. Maybe we discover that we've made mistakes. That's why discussion and conversation and dreaming and musing and reflecting, I love that word, reflecting, is very important for the Christian person to do. Okay, now back to Mary. So now Mary is not just the vehicle. She is the willing assistant to God. Isn't that interesting? The willing assistant to God. Now, I just thought of that this very minute. I don't have it in any of my notes here. But, you know, God makes the man and the woman, and he says, be fruitful and multiply and inherit the earth and have stewardship over it, have management over it, and every plant and every seed and every fish and every bird and every animal I give into your hands. You are the caretakers of the earth. You know, the whole green movement is based upon a Christian thought, a Judaic thought, a Judaic-Christian thought, that we are not the users, the rapers of the earth. We are the caretakers. We are the gardeners. God placed the man in the garden, and he is the gardener, you know, that type of thing. Okay, getting back to Mary now. So she is working alongside of God in the conception. And for Protestants, that goes as far as the birth of Jesus when he's finally born. We have the virginal conception. We talked all about that in the previous episode. If you want to go back to episode 3 and even episode 2 to talk about the difference between virginal conception and immaculate conception, all those other theological concepts. Okay, back to Mary. Now, what is going on here is that Jesus and Mary, the new Adam, who's not her spouse, but of course her son, he might be the new Cain, perhaps, if you want to look at it. He might be the new Seth, if you want to. You take your pick. I haven't gone that far in my own thinking. That's all in development with you and on these programs. So, you know, if you want to, you know, call me up on some kind of charges in the local history, that's your business. But you wouldn't want to bother with that. Nobody does. Anyhow, but anyway, the point is, Mary cooperates with God. God cooperates with Mary. They have Jesus. Jesus cooperates with Mary. Mary cooperates with Jesus. And I'm addressing this to the Protestants, but somehow or other, when she pops the kid out, as they say in modern language, and when she has the birth in Bethlehem, the Protestants wash their hands of her. Oh, well, that's done. She's taken care of. And I think that's a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake and an injustice and a misunderstanding of what is really going on in this biblical story. And I think that Protestantism is impoverished because of that. And Protestantism doesn't understand the depth and the breadth and the height and the magnificence of the incarnatus est, the incarnation of Jesus. We say in our creed every Sunday in the Lutheran Church, in the Episcopal Church, in the Methodist Church, and he was incarnate from the Virgin Mary. He became a man by the Virgin Mary. Incarnatus est, that's the Latin word. Beautiful, beautiful phrasing. And one of the most important tenets of Christianity, above all other tenets, is that God was incarnated by the Virgin Mary and became a human person, just like you and me, in every aspect, even the possibility of sin. Jesus was like us. And that, by the way, I'm going to jump to another story which we'll deal in the future, but Jesus takes his body with him. You know, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? He doesn't leave it here. Can't find it. It's nowhere. You're going to dig it up anyway. He takes it with him. So Jesus still has, call it the resurrection body, glorified body, whatever you want to call it. I'm running out of time, rushing through this. I shouldn't rush so much. I apologize, but I have so much to tell you about this wonderful Christian faith that you should know about and think about and enjoy. It's an awesome thing. Okay, Mary, Jesus, together, the new Eve, the new Adam, among other things, are the product of the love of God for human beings. Jesus, incarnatus est, is the product of the love of the Father for the children, for the family, for his creation. Because God makes the human person. And when the human person fails in the book of Genesis, God dedicates himself to finding a way to perfect that which was imperfect, to right that which was wrong, to heal that which was wounded, to correct that which was wronged. And the key thing, and we deal with that extensively in the previous segment of this, about the free will of the man and the woman, that God makes the human person with free will. We tune into that one and pull it up out of the archives and listen to that one, because that's a terribly important one too. But you see, I do not think, back to Mary, not to discard her at Christmas, not to say, well, okay, that's done, because then she's just a womb, you know, she's just a body that God utilizes in an untoward way. I believe that would be degrading, you know. God makes the commandments, the Ten Commandments, and you know, you shall have the Lord thy God. There's no other gods before me. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor your father and mother that it may be well with you. You shall not kill. You shall not kill. The human person. And throughout, permeating the entire section of the book of Leviticus and the book of Exodus, where these things are recorded for us on the Ten Commandments, is God's giving to us the perfect law, which is the perfect reflection of God's perfection. And this perfect reflection of God's perfection is not something that binds or hinders God, but I do not believe that God uses Mary as merely a tool, because that would cause God to break his own rules. Well, God can break his own rules if he wants. God is God. He can do what he wants. But he doesn't do that because he's a righteous and just God, and his rules are not unfair even to God. In other words, the rules of the Ten Commandments, and I think permeating the Ten Commandments is the philosophy or the theology or the fact that God regards the human being as person, that individual human person. John, you have a name. Mary, you have a name. Geraldo, or whoever you are, whatever your name is, Hidalgo, Jacob, anything, I don't care, just mean boy, girl, Mary, Jane, Martha, whatever. The personhood is in the name. The personhood is in the name. We're not tree, and then oak tree, and then maple tree. Trees, We are cow, no, cows, Angus meat, whatever. We are Fred, Jane, Bill, you know what I'm saying? This is very important. And so the point of this whole half-hour program, I'm going to have to bring it to a close now, is to say that the human person is planned for, and that God and Mary, who is this Mary? She is a cooperator with God. She agrees, she has faith, she submits. And because of that, she is the first. She's the first since the beginning. Eve did not even say yes. She said no. God said, don't eat the tree. She said, I don't care what you say. I'm doing what I want to do. The angel comes to Mary and says, you're going to conceive in your womb and bear a son and call his name Jesus. And she says, okay. She's troubled. She's wondering. She questions. But ultimately, she says, be it unto me as God wills it to be. So she's the first believer. She's the first faithful. She's the first receiver of God's Son into herself. She's the first who has the conception of God, Jesus, in herself. And it's one of the goals of all Christians to have Jesus conceived within ourselves. She is the first feeder of God. She's the first protector of God. She's the first defender of God. She's the first, she suckles Jesus at her breast. She's the most intimate with God. She has the most intimacy, the love of a mother suckling a child. That intimacy reflected in the Virgin Mary and Jesus is a beautiful image, but not only an image, an example. You see what I'm trying to say? After the conception, after the birth, there is so much that we need to reflect upon in Mary and Jesus and what this means, what this duo, this cooperative relationship between Mary and Jesus is for us. We're going to be looking at the Rosary in future programs. We're not going to let this go. I want to just, in the last 2 minutes, say that the other day on YouTube, I was listening to a lot of programs about a man named Don LaFontaine. And he's the voice that everyone knows. Don LaFontaine died, and there's a tribute to him. It's La, L-A, Fontaine, F-O. I want to just call your attention to that. It's a wonderful thing. It's on YouTube. The name is Don LaFontaine. And I had watched this program, and it fit in so well because he was a person who I didn't know. YouTube introduced me to him, and Don, D-O-N, LaFontaine, the videos on that program and the life that he led and the person that he was affected all of us. And when after watching many, many interviews with him and being delighted and saying, boy, I would love to meet this man, I came across the next one, which was like the third or fourth one or the fifth one, whichever it was, and it was a tribute to him because he had died. And I thought to myself, I was shocked. And what we need to remember is that a lot of what we need to do in our life is be prepared to die, and because we do. This is Pastor Fred. I'm looking forward to talking to you next time. Thank you very much for listening.